call the meeting to order. Just to start with, I would like to just make a couple opening remarks. This is our budget workshop meeting, and we're excited about looking at 2023, even though it's a complicated look when you think about trying to plan for 2023, given what's going on right now. I just want to mention a couple things that happened since our last meeting. We had a really great State of the Port meeting last week with the Greater Houston Partnership, and we were able to showcase our deep bench and our talent at the port. We had a really great panel that started with Lori Brownell was on it. Also, Ryan Mariacker was there, and also Eloy Cortez from ILA. And I've received a ton of just calls and seeing people and emails just talking about how great it was to see how much talent we have at the port, how deep our bench is, and how smart and articulate these folks were. And it was really a great time to showcase everything that was going on at the port, but also to showcase our talent. And then I got a lot of comments about, and they sort of made a check mark on this, which is a high point. I didn't really expect that. And that was that we talked about labor relations, and given some of the noise out on the West Coast and elsewhere, people were really excited about the fact that we have great labor relations, and that's, I think Eloy really sort of put a point on that and talked about how ILA has brought workers in when we needed them, and we had a really great deep bench there. So I appreciate, Ryan and Lori and Eloy's contribution to that. And I think it's probably going to be our format going forward. I think it's really great to be able to get our folks out in the community. And I know they do that already, but maybe in some really good conferences, we'll be more of that. I just want to thank our teams at the port and surrounding the port, the ILA, seafarers, pilots. I know we're going to the holidays. Our cargo business continues to be really strong, and it looks like it's going to be strong through the end of the year and the beginning of next year. And without the team that we have helping us at the port and all the things that they do every single day, we can't get that cargo moving. And clearly, I think the benefit that people see at Port Houston is that we all are pulling in the same direction, and they know that when they send cargo here, it gets moved quickly and efficiently. So I want to thank everyone who helps make that happen. So with that, commissioners, any other comments or
we're ready to go? I would like to say real quick, Mr. Chairman, we have some more talent. We had one of our commissioners here get a great honor this week.
Texas Executive Women on the Move.
Yeah.
On the Move.
Humility is a great asset, Wendy.
On the Move. I like that.
And Clyde is always there to support everything.
I didn't hear about it. That's
awesome. Because I didn't want to share.
I'm glad. That obviously well deserves, and thanks for helping us.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, then staff reports, Roger.
Just real quickly, our volume continues to be strong, and Tim's going to talk about that a little bit. I'm not going to steal his thunder, but you continue to hear about import volume across the country, especially in the Trans-Pacific, softening. Still isn't happening here, and all I'm going to say is every year is a challenge of trying to project and forecast what the business is going to be like. I'm just saying this year is especially challenging, and we've reached back across the organization. A lot of people have been working on these budgets for next year, and I think we've got a really solid one put together, and look forward to this is our best year, three of our best months ever, I think, have been the last 3 months as far as volume at Port Houston. And so we look forward to next year, and we've got a lot of things to talk about, and Tim appreciate you and your group and the whole organization coming together to put together a solid budget for next year. And that's all I have.
Commissioners, any questions? Okay, great. Well, let's go to MD1, public appearances. I think we have a couple who have signed up. So Leticia Gutierrez of Airline. So I assume you're online here, perhaps. Oh, do we have to do that yet? Did I miss it?
We have minutes to approve.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Here's your on.
Okay, great. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
This is Leticia Gutierrez with Air Alliance Houston and also a Portside community member. I wanted to start off with applauding the Port of Houston net zero goal by 2050. Hoping I'm around when that happens. But I would like to ask that you consider publishing an addendum that would more clearly identify how the port's financial plan aligns with and supports this very important goal. We've learned some mechanisms for organizations to meaningfully incorporate climate considerations into their budget making process. And one of the mechanisms that has been published by the Task Force on Climate Related Financial Disclosures, which I can provide the link to, it outlines how corporate boards should exercise their oversight and responsibilities for environmental risks and opportunities, and management's role in assessing and managing these risks. We're strongly encouraging the Ports Commission to review this report. I wanted to also mention that we do applaud the port for purchasing 4 electric and 26 hybrid rubber tire gantry cranes this year. The port has also has considerable opportunity in the Inflation Reduction Act for funding more investment in clean equipment, electrification, infrastructure, and other opportunities to reduce emissions. We do know that the port is investing $4.5 million to retrofit one of the Project 11 dredges with selective catalytic reduction technology. And they also contract for a second dredge with a Tier 4 engine. We know that the Army Corps has said that it cannot contract for clean equipment, but there's nothing preventing the port from funding similar retrofits. So thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Absolutely, I appreciate your comments. And I would just say that the Port Commission agrees with you that we need to have a specific plan for climate change, and we are working on those. One of the things that I've asked our teams to do is to make sure that we understand what other ports are doing and what the best ports are, what their systems are, how they're implementing, you know, climate issues, and we will be working on that over the next 6 or 8 months in terms of being able to get good baselines for how we compare with other ports. And right now we believe we compare very, very favorably given everything that's out there to see publicly. So we definitely agree with the idea that we need to have a specific plan and have dollars related to that specific plan that gives us, shows us the pathway to carbon neutral by 2050. Commissioners, any other comments, questions? Okay, great. Our next speaker is Adrian Shelley from Public Citizen. Adrian, you're good to go.
Thank you. This is Adrian with Public Citizen. I think my colleague Leticia covered it well. So I guess I'll just agree, you know, the budget is a great opportunity to show the commitment, right? And, you know, transparency in budgeting is a great practice. And, you know, we want to celebrate the work that the port is doing. And, you know, to the extent that y'all help us to do that, you know, by demonstrating the commitment in the budget, we will, you know, continue to celebrate its successes and also, you know, look for further opportunities. So, you know, we've seen the budgets that's published today, and, you know, there's, as Leticia mentioned, there's still opportunity to demonstrate those commitments with a little more transparency there. So thank you for what's been done, and appreciate the opportunity to speak today.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm going to make one more comment about, and then back to the PCS comment about Project 11 and the port's commitment to cleaner dredges and the investment that's being made in that area. And while clearly we're partners with the Corps of Engineers has their own and policy and procedures on how they operate. But I will tell you that the fact that we have the largest dredging contract in America today, and that these dredges are working in the channel, it's highly likely that those companies will bid for the core work with the existing infrastructure that they have, which basically allows them to use those cleaner dredges as well. And so from just a competitive perspective in the marketplace, it would seem to me that those companies that have already done contracts with Port Houston have sort of a leg up, if you will, in the sense of not having to deploy new dredges and they can or teams or so it seems logical for those entities to be pretty competitive in a bid process with the Corps without any additional, you know, burden on cost to the Corps. I think the other thing I would say is that, and this is to your point, Leticia, that ESG is a big deal, and it's an important thing that everyone is looking at, not just Port Houston, but other companies like the dredging companies that are actually working for Port Houston, too. So I'm hopeful that because of the investment that we have made and the dredging companies that we've already hired in cleaner dredges, that we, as we go forward with the core project, they'll be available for work in the channel as well. So, commissioners, any other comments or questions? Okay, great. All right, let's then move right on and finance. And I think Mr. Finley, you have the floor.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners.
Good morning,
guests. Thanks for your time today. To go fairly quickly, obviously, please just stop me. I respond to hey as well as Tim, so please stop. If I can get this to react, there we go. Quick housekeeping item here on this page, reminder that Hess County property tax receipts are not included in this operating and capital budget at all. Those are used exclusively for debt service on the general obligation GO debt bonds. And again, though you're approving the budget, as you know, during the year we'll bring forward any item exceeding $50,000, be that expense or capital, for your approval throughout the year. Today's content, similar to the past, again, a little bit of narrative overview. We'll get into cargo. We'll talk about the income statement, drill a little bit into revenue, expense, headcount. We will stop and talk about our capital plans and liquidity. That will conclude the 23 budget, and then we will just provide an overview of the five-year plan, which doesn't require your adoption, just a review on your part. So clearly, cargo assumptions are central to constructing a responsible financial plan. And considering, as Roger mentioned, various industry and market sources, they're all over the map, as you may know. But in this budget, we're calling down the growth rates for container units next year to just under 2%. And similarly, general cargoes easing off this tremendous year we've had in 22. Item F3, I believe, on your agenda this morning are for CPI adjustments, tariff adjustments. Those adjustments are baked into this operating revenue outlook. Those things roll into a number, it's estimated at $609 million for next year. That's down just under 5%. The biggest change year over year really coming from an anticipated decline in the storage fees that we have been receiving over the last, say, 18 months or so, returning to more of a normal level next year. That's the budget assumption is that that will come down. That's really what's causing that decrease there year over year, and we'll talk about that further. Salaries and benefits, people costs, as you know, is about half of the cost we carry each year. This reflects new headcount, replacement headcount, a continuation of the performance-based merit program, as well as the incentive program tied to attaining our cash generation targets. Other spending is up. We'll talk about that again coming up. I mentioned before, there's a total of $677 million of capital awards before you today, split $579 million between PHA operating capital, a very aggressive plan we'll talk about, and $99 million of awards for Project 11. And then the proverbial bottom line is the finance guy is liquidity, portraying a very stable outlook for 23 and honestly within the five-year plan. We do have potentially a need for additional credit in the middle of next year, late next year, and potentially a financing need to complete our funding of the construction costs for Project 11. We'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Tim, yes, sir. Question. So Chevron Phillips announced an $8.5 billion project yesterday in Orange. Do we anticipate getting some additional imports through that? Well, in the past, even projects over in the Golden Triangle have used basically West Chambers County as staging areas, importing a lot of vessels, et cetera, through the port. Do we anticipate, John, do we anticipate any additional?
I think it's about 5 years away.
2026,
yeah,
down in Orange, the new plant,
yes,
we are expecting
exports. Okay. I'm talking about imports, too, for the construction, John.
Yes, sir, modules, things like that.
Right. Well, yeah. As you know, they built there is a big, I guess, one better word, assembly area in Chambers County now that they're putting together for other projects, but I'm wondering if we're thinking we're probably going to get some of that.
We usually do.
We have project cargo coming in now for projects that are going on in Golden Pass over there, so that are happening down here. So yeah,
yep.
Good.
Sure.
The facilities to do that.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Page 10, if you're able to follow along there, we begin to look at the cargo assumptions. The left side of the page, with regards to container terminal units, again, the budget comprehends just under a 2% increase next year. Again, contextually, that's coming off of 2 years of high double-digit growth, of course. A lot of considerations here. Again, the markets are consensus is a slowdown generically in the first half of next year, if not full year. But again, the extent of that, the depth, the time, the duration of that, totally unknown. Now, we have retail import signals saying specifically that Fort Houston could be down, single digits next year in the first half. Now, combating that, of course, historically, we've weathered these recessionary periods quite well. If you look at the Great Recession of 2007-8-9, we were actually up half a point in our container units through that period. I think the pandemic, we were down about 1%. So, that says, we're fairly well insulated in this region and in the state. One of the many things that helps combat that is a nice import-export load balance we have back to the capacity that was announced yesterday in terms of outbound resin, outbound export loads, helping to give us a good balance between import and export. And that certainly helps us maintain a strong business model. So the net of all that is uncertainty next year, and we wanted to try to find a number sort of in between, center-weighted between the skies falling and glorious sunshine. So we picked about a 2% growth overall in the units. Underneath that, I'll say very quickly, is around 3.5-4% growth in loads. So whether imports about 3% and export loads about 4%, it's empties that are really calling that down to 2%. So that's central to the budget, of course. That represents about 80% of our operating revenue out of the container terminals. still is a little bit of a similar picture, again, coming off an incredible year of 22. If we finish in this 5 million, 5.3 million ton range, that'll be the second highest since our record year in 2014, 6.7 million tons. So we're calling it down to 4.5, but I believe this table is aware that's a very good year for steel. Again, a lot of conflicting signals out there, some potential slowdown in drilling activity, but I think we're also aware there's good international demand for products exported from here. The steel coming in to support that, right? So we have, again, some things all over the map, and then some expectation of increased drilling activity in 24. That's why you see a bit of a rise there. Next page to the left are auto units. As you know, at the Bayport Terminal, we're in need of that capacity to support our container growth. We are ramping down the auto function there at the Bayport Terminal. And again, have plans, as you'll see in the capital, to begin to design additional yard capacity over there. And then also, you may be aware, our customer at the Turning Basin has indicated they'll be leaving at the end of 23. So that's why 24 is not a mistake. There are no auto units there. The team is already, of course, out pursuing opportunities to backfill that very attractive cargo space with additional cargo and lease lessees for that position. So other general cargoes, again, trending with coming off a crazy high year into just a standard normal growth pattern for all other general cargoes. So that's our cargo content behind the budget before you today.
Chairman, can I ask one question?
Sure, go ahead.
So, Tim, what you're saying, the increase in cargo that we've had, the extra vessels and extra loads, you're projecting that we're going to maintain that level.
It's a good point.
Okay.
Yes.
And with a 2% increase.
Now, some of those extra loaders have already called off, I believe.
They have.
Right. But yes, we're not coming off this curve. We're going to maintain that is the assumption in the budget.
That's good, because some other ports are losing cargo that they gained during that period of time.
That's right.
But we're maintaining, and you're projecting we will maintain it for the next year. Good.
That's right. Okay. That's right.
What about offshore wind? I hear a lot of talk about a lot of cargo starting to move going forward.
I don't have any interest in
that.
There is some interest, very preliminary, very early stages. We're in conversations with companies looking for lay down space for offshore wind on our facilities. And that is a sector that we're engaged with.
Great. I'm hearing a lot.
We haven't seen an issue with the wind energy. The infrastructure bill really is just about the pipeline is now just opening up.
Page 13 is a easy entrance into a bunch of numbers, just to graphically illustrate really the revenue and cash flows. In the center of that, representing our current outlook for 2022 at $639 million of revenue, up 23%. Again, a significant storage revenue component of that, probably $85 million above run rate, contributing to that 639. By the way, if you do the math, you know, our units are up about 17%. Our revenue without storage would be up around 19-20%. So a fantastic year operationally, generating over $350 million of cash projected this year. And as you'll see, we have plans to consume that as we add to our container capacity and efficiency. Next year, again, calling that down to $609 million, about a 5% decline. Again, if you normalize that, I won't go too far inside baseball. If you normalize the storage revenues to grow with just units and our yard capacity, you would see about an 8% revenue growth just based on units and tariff changes into 2023. Spending, again, is up a pinch. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But all that rolls into cash generation, still very healthy, of course, at $290 million for next year. Sorry, I'm having technical difficulties. Let me close this. So a lot of numbers on this page, forgive me. The dotted lines will be a little bit easier way to comprehend. So those right three columns are comparing the budget to, again, our expected outcome for 22. Again, revenue you see coming down 4.6%. We've talked about that. That's led by storage. Gross margin is a very important indicator of sort of the financial efficiency, effectiveness of our operations, coming down about 8 points. You see 7.9 circled there. Again, almost entirely storage, some of the general cargo decline contributing that, and then containers softening that landing a bit. Spending up about $13 million in the G&A space. Again, forgive me, we'll talk about that. I will call your attention in the budget 2023 call. We see the circle around the $26 million outflow and the $45 million inflow. This will be the first time I mention or remind you, perhaps, we have assumed a mid-year debt offering to complete our funding of Project 11. That is why interest expense goes from $15 million this year up to $26 next year. Very much a placeholder. We'll talk later about alternatives to issuing debt next year, depending on the market's interest rate environment. The non-operating income, $45 million, a large number. Round numbers, you know, sort of half of that related to interest income on our cash and investments. Again, we're sitting on a significant amount today as we prepare to pay out for the capital in the Project 11. Plus, a great year. Congratulations and thanks to Rich Burns' infrastructure team and grants. We'll have a great year on infrastructure grant, input grant coming in 23, about $15 million. And the PIDP grant, which is associated with Bayport Wharf 6, around $6 million. So nice support there coming in for us on cash. This shouldn't be so hard, forgive me. I'm certain it's operator error. There's no question about
asking.
Yeah, the arrow key is taking it to a different one. Okay, so we'll drill in a bit to revenue. Very simple bridge, again, comparing operating revenue 639 to 609 in 2023. Again, the biggest item there being an anticipated decline in the storage revenue. Not returning quite to standard run rate, but still a bit elevated as we anticipate that coming down given some cleanup of the supply chain anomalies we've faced in the last 18 months or so. Net container revenue increased. Clearly, that's the unit increase that we are projecting. Some of the tariff changes contributing to that. I showed you the decrease in general cargo, driving the turning basin revenues down around $6 million, and then some other assumptions on leases, et cetera. So that just bridges you from this year's revenue to 2023. Page 17, I won't spend a lot of time here. This is sort of a mixed chart for you in the pie. The bar on the left, I just caution there, now you're looking at the 609 revenue we discussed of operating, plus that $45 million of non-operating revenue we assume for next year. So that's total revenues. If you divide up that pie, the pie is the same as it has been for a number of years in terms of the makeup, largely being containers. We talked about the drivers behind that decline being storage, turning basin driven by cargoes, et cetera, et cetera. That mix is very consistent with prior years. All right, expense analysis, same thing here. We're looking at total operating and G&A expenses compare 22 to where we anticipate 23. Forgive me, this is a busy slide, a lot of words and numbers. I'll be gentle as we go through here. So looking at the cascade to the right, the changes in operating expense, you can see the bulk of that driven by PHA and ILA salaries, benefits. Well, that's volume, that's clearly capacity growth in terms of both equipment and yard and wharf capacity, as well as new replacement headcount, merit program I mentioned, and some other things. Depreciation and amortization, it is fairly well split here as we begin to depreciate those the capacity additions that we've had over the last year or so and what's coming into play in 23, and the maintenance dredge activities largely at the container terminals is impacting that $13 million as well. There's a terminal chassis program out there, both terminals. These are reefer-based chassis to support, again, the growth and the volume of containers that we have in our yards. There's actually a grant not considered in these numbers. There's a grant for $1.8 million that helps offset some of this cost. So that's the operating changes. G&A, again, same picture on salaries, benefits, et cetera, et cetera. We've baked in sort of a general 5% increase, as we're all painfully and personally aware of the cost increases we face for travel and supplies and just general contracts. That's considered in this budget. As you know, we are under Charles Thompson's leadership, we are embarking on our search for the next generation ERP. So our next broad computer system, information system, we will in earnest begin implementation next year. So there's a cost in here for the new software and some staffing tied to that.
So yes, and you expect it to be decided on and implemented next year. So beginning 20, when will it only have the new system in and operating then?
It could be 3 to 4 years. I don't know if Charles is on
the No, next year is just to get the to choose the platform we're going to use, to get the licenses, to start the process. Yeah, we're still 2 to 3 years away from having it implemented. And you're looking at a $25 million overall.
Right.
$2 million is just the start. So we're on the timeline to replace JD Edwards, which is our current ERP. They are going to stop supporting it in 5 years. So that's our timeline that we're working on.
Okay.
Discretionary investments, this list of 7 or so items doesn't make up the rounded $3 million. These are some of the bigger ticket items that, as a staff, we agree these are important strategic and business community efforts that we should support. So that gives you an idea. Again, that's 7. There's another list of 10 that make up that $3 million, but all purposeful, intentional investments we think that are right to make at this time. And then all other handful of depreciation and other general overhead items. That gives you a bridge just to let you know how the expenses are flowing. Similar look at the pie. Again, you're looking at total expenses, both by operating we just talked to, as well as the non-operating piece. But the pie on the right, again, very consistent. You can see there, again, about half of our total expenses relate to salaries, people cost, broadly defined. Around 40% of that is with our ILA partners, and then the PHA portion below that. Again, not a lot of change in the mix of that expense profile year over year. All right, new this year, really just confirming that the P&D budget as approved in the September workshop is contained in this budget. It is unchanged from what you approved in September, so we just wanted to acknowledge that for you this morning. Also new this year, an admittedly high-level slide articulating over $80 million in funding within this 23 budget associated with the port's efforts to support ESSG, categorized on the left as programs, initiatives, department overhead, all those activities focused again on ESSG. To the right are assets and investments, again, that contribute favorably to this this important strategy we have. So roll all that up together. Those dollars are infused throughout the billion-dollar budget that you're approving here this year. So that's new. We just wanted to share that with the audience for your awareness.
I think the key thing on this whole ESG and reporting, and especially in climate environmental, is that we tie our sustainability action plan with our net zero carbon plan for 2050, and then we start allocating dollars to those components within those plans so that we can track that over a period of time. And I think that's going to be really important, both from a transparency perspective for the community, but also just for our own information about how, you know, how much we're spending and how that relates to our overall budget. I think at the I remember saying this at the State of the Port, you know, a quote from Kermit the Frog, it is tough to be green. And we know that it is, and it's not just because we all want to be green, but so ultimately you have to balance it with the expenditures and over a long period of time, right? So I think that's going to be something that, and compare it to how other ports are doing so that we can get a good benchmark about where we are. We obviously want to lead, and that'll give us the framework to know that actually we're leading and be able to communicate with the community about how much we're investing in it and when. Okay.
Go ahead. Can I just point out, too, I think this just, you know, where it shows there, we certainly need to highlight these things and where these contributions and expenditures that you mentioned, a debt of 15, now going to $26 million a year for payment of debt specifically on the channel. It's going to speed up the process by many years, which immediately reduces the emission. I mean, somebody can do the numbers on that of the return on that investment as well. It's not necessarily showing up on that screen. Right. Is that correct? So there's some things in here that we need to continue, you know, to validate or, you know, to show that, hey, these investments are being made, not only capital investments, programmatic, but also you know, contributions that are helping the environment.
That's a great point. Yes.
Yes, that's right. So we think we can build a new tour boat for $2.2 million?
There's $5 million in there somewhere, Commissioner.
Okay.
I have a placeholder five for the boat and then some other odds and ends. So yeah, we'll be bringing a decision to you early next
year. I'm glad to hear it. I hate to see the old girl go.
I think it's
57 years old.
Almost five.
No, from 1957.
I want to make sure that everybody understands when I talk about these environmental initiatives, I think Port Houston leads. And when you compare us to other ports, we're doing really, really well. And we just need to make sure that we're explaining it to everyone and showing the transparency. And that's something that we can do a better job on. And I think everybody, when you think about, in my situation with Camden, you know, publicly traded company, we're getting better and better and better and better explaining our environmental or ESSG, you know, framework. But it's something that I think we're all going to get better at, and it's just something that's important for us to really focus on. Also,
yep.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Roddy. We are leading the environmental, no question.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Page 23 in your book. Again, a little busy, forgive me. This is the headcount proposal for next year. We'll stay on the right side of the page. You can see as of September 30, port employees, this excludes all casual labor, ILA, et cetera, of course. Board badge employees, 717 at the end of September 30th. We have 66 open requisitions today. The bulk of those, as you see in the fine print, 58 replacement recs, be that resignation. There's a nice pile, if you will, of internal progression within that, about 19, meaning they found career-enhancing moves, they may have found promotional opportunities, et cetera. So that's an exciting number baked into that 58. Then new to 23, 46 additional headcount. You can see in the gray box, I think it's great, to the lower right. 23 of those are in operations, almost entirely maintenance, which are so essential to keeping this economic engine running. There are 7 port security and emergency operations headcount in there, also so important to protect our people and our assets. And then you see 16 G&A and where those are spread around. Some of those are associated with the next generation ERP, the formation system activities. Again, we will pull the trigger on those as we see the need and is justified, and then smattering throughout the other organizations. Big picture, the way we look at this as we're right-sizing a lot of the back office functions to keep up with the business. You know, again, we've grown cumulatively by 15% over the last 2 years, so we're trying to get those functions in place. Selfishly, for instance, I have a collections person in there. Well, you can imagine with the cash that we're working, the number of invoices we're working, we just need more people to help us keep up with that. And to Commissioner Fitzgerald's point, we are projecting that to hold and sustain that level of volume. So a lot of that is catching up and keeping up with the business growth that we've experienced in the last couple of years. Okay, from people resource to assets and capital. Page 25, we always begin with a gentle piece of the pie here. So, again, you're looking in total at $677 million of awards to be brought forward to you in 2023, $579 million of that for port operating capital and $99 million for Project 11. I believe the first Project 11 coming at us is March, associated with some placement area prep for Segment 4, and then a large Segment 1C coming, I believe, Charlie, in June or July, for around $90 million. Then you see our PHA capital broke again into strategic. That means largely new development, new capacity. If you look at the fine print down there, about three rows, you see Bayport East and BCT West. Those are large container area opportunities. We'll talk more about the container terminals in a second. But just to the point is that BCT is also in a strategic new development mode as we seek additional container capacity, in this case, to the west. Recapitalization is almost entirely Barber's Cut. You can see significant awards planned for BCT Wharves 4 and 5 and container yards. And then Turning Basin will continue to invest in this very important asset upstream, if you will, these public docks, which are so important. City Dock 2021, as well as Manchester 2, should go in 2023. Channel maintenance projects, in this case, are just that. They are largely placement area focused next year in terms of maintenance and stabilization. Other work around armoring our placement areas in the channel. And then remaining projects 28, I will call out within that is a placeholder for the executive office building, largely earnest money, design money set aside next year if we pull the trigger and make those decisions. Obviously, we'll be bringing that forward to this body for your consideration. So that's a high-level look at the plan for next year. Page 26, a lot of numbers. I won't take you through this. I will point out, though, you can't really say it, but if you look at 22 budget and 23 reforecast at those container terminal lines, what you'll see is from the time we budgeted for the container terminals last year to what we think we'll do this year is up about $70 million. We've talked about accelerated capacity. So within this are largely a lot of the wharf cranes. Remember the 26 RTG cranes that we awarded. There are, I believe, three or four wharf cranes as well and some other things. So the increase from budget to reforecast was to accelerate some capacity. Again, for 23, we'll talk a little bit on the next couple of slides on the container terminals. Sound development, again, is largely placement area focused. Turning Basin, I mentioned, that's City Dock 2021. Manchester 2. The real estate, the big numbers in there again are some placeholders for advancing our EOB strategy. Commissioner Corgi, the $5 million boat is sitting in that real estate number of $26 million, and then a handful of other things totaling to our $579 million outlook plus 99. I will call attention lastly to that very bottom line, which is grant reimbursements. Those are, again, incoming monies across those periods that we anticipate in grant receipts, reimbursement based, we apply for those monies as we spend them. Okay, 27 may be a bit difficult on the screen. If you don't have a hard copy, I apologize. It may be difficult even if you have a hard copy. But we want to give you a little bit of a visual for each of the container terminals. This represents both terminals, about 82% of that $579 million. So we thought it was worth a few minutes. The circles are telling you that's activity coming in the 23 plan this year. Wharf 7 being the big construction award next year. Wharf 7 and their cranes, as you see in the detail below table. And then the others are design activities focused on that broadly defined east end. Wharf 1 design next year, you can see the date is the construction award plan. Container Yard 1 South design, the award planned in 2025. And then again, I mentioned our activities on the east end, so essential to keeping up with this growth. We'll design 8 and 9 next year, and then you see in those circles when the construction awards are planned. We did highlight Wharf 8 design out in 2025, so that's in the 5-year plan to design Wharf 8. And ultimately, Wharf 9 would be beside that two large capacity wharfs coming in the future. Next page, 28, is similar look for Barber's Cut. Many more circles here because, again, Barber's Cut has a lot of activity next year, about $300 million of awards. You can see in the table the big dollar items were 4 and 5, CY 6 and 7, and then various design activities coming on. Also interspersed, you'll see some completion dates. Wharf 3, for instance, I believe is completed and operational. So, Jeff, I don't know that answer. Other container yards, et cetera. But the development on the west, again, essential for container handling and storage activities, as well as some reefer activities. See the slab yard 2024. We'll do that design next year. So that is largely to handle reefers at the BCT terminal.
Comfortable that we have the electrical capacity out there for all those.
Good question.
That's part of the design. If you remember, they just built a substation, and that was all part of the new cranes and anything else we needed.
All right. A lot of numbers on page 29. You'll slowly and just hit a couple of those. So, we'll start top left, entering 2022 with $579 million of available PHA operating cash. You see dropping down there in the first box, projected to end this year with around $707 million of available cash we're talking about. Then as you move to the right, you see our 23 budget and projected into 24. The circle around the 398, let's call it $400 million, will be relevant in a moment, but with the capital plans and the awards that you've already approved, we should end, we're projecting to end next year around $400 million in PHA cash. The second half of that page, or the bottom third, related to Project 11. Again, entering this year with just under $400 million. That was the bond issuance at the end of 21. And you can see in the 2023 column, I made reference to this budget assumes mid-year that we would have a second issue of $425 million of revenue bonds. The relevance now going back up to the $400 million is, again, depending on interest rate environment, depending on the markets, given our cash position and our credit position, we may be able to delay that borrowing if we think economically it makes sense, the lowest borrowing cost. Perhaps rates begin to decline in 24, so we delay that debt issuance into 24. We can leverage our PHA cash, pay ourselves back, and stall that ultimate debt issuance if that is the decision at the time. Clearly, we'll bring that to you for your consideration.
It's very interesting when you think about the first bond, revenue bond we did. It was all about run, not walk, right? Because interest rates were so low and we were very nervous about interest rates rising for good reason. They didn't happen to rise. We did in December of 2021.
Yeah, we closed in December.
Right, and by June or July of 22, we probably would have paid 200 basis points more for that, for them. That just to give you a sense of that, that would probably really taken our $15 million interest cost to 20, you know,
low 20.
Yep. So it was a really well-timed and important issuance. And where the world is today, you definitely would not want to be in the bond market today. Only if you have to. The only people borrowing money today are ones that have to, not ones that have the flexibility of being able to move things around the way we do here. So I think, number one, it was really great, the issuance. I always love to high-five it again whenever we have a chance. And the great thing is we have flexibility not to have to do anything, you know, for the next couple of years.
Page 39, and this is award capacity. So this is your ability of the governing body to have money to appropriate for projects throughout the year. The only circle there is around the important circle is around the 302, meaning, again, I mentioned early that we could be in a position, depending on our attaining the schedule that we have before you, the 579 of capital awards, we could need additional credit capacity late next year. Again, that could be the fourth quarter of next year. But we'll bring that to you and give you plenty of heads up if we need to do that. It is more expensive now to put that credit capacity in. It's just given the cost of money. So, again, it'll be an important decision, and we'll bring that forward. But the proverbial bottom line there around ending funds available, all total, you can see, again, a very comfortable position in this short-term view. So with that, just to conclude, page 31, again, a lot of market uncertainty, but I think we have a good center-weighted unit growth plan, general cargo, without being overly conservative and yet too optimistic. Financial outlook is quite strong, as we just talked through. We are continuing to accelerate our capacity additions, and that does not mean we're taking our foot off the gas with regards to adding that capacity. We have a piece we need to catch up just to build some cushion that we had before, which is very attractive to carriers and steamship lines. Now, if we see volumes turn south further than what we're planning, of course, we can moderate those plans, and we'll do so. But at this point, we are accelerating that capacity as much as possible. And then lastly, the liquidity position that we showed you quite sound in 23, and we will have some decisions next year that we'll bring forward to this body. So with that concludes our 23 presentation. I'm happy to respond or answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask, I know 6 and 7 is in this budget completion, right? Mm-hmm. How far are we going into the next tunnel, the cruise tunnel, in this budget? Any planning, or is there anything in there? I guess that's 8 and 9.
Eight and nine. That, for 24 or 25.
We'll design wharf 8 and 9.
25,
I believe.
But, yeah, 24 and 27 for those two.
And the development of the 100 acres is on that page.
Yeah, it's on the colorful page.
Page 27.
Yeah, so we will design those east end yards, Commissioner Fitzgerald, next year.
Next year.
And then they go to construction 24 and 27.
And that's the construction.
And then Wharf 8 design is in, I can't read my own notes, 25. And then Wharf 9 would be after that. Those wharves and the support of those would be very expensive,
mm-hmm,
because it require breakwater, channel work, as well as
GLO. Kind of go to the GLO.
The GLO and permitting, et cetera.
Part of the master planning process right now, the master plan in the East End, includes 4 and 8 acres of yard.
Okay.
That master plan is currently being done. The design is right on the heels of that master plan completion.
Okay, good. So my next question is, you had mentioned that we've got in the budget for next year 3 additional ship cranes, but I see in here we got 4 for Wharf 7. Is that additional 4, additional 3?
Yes.
Okay, so we budget in a total of
well, you have to purchase, there's a lead time of 2 years.
Right, okay.
You have to purchase in them and this year to arrive when the work's completed in 2 years.
You might recall we had an extra order of 3 cranes that was non-allocated for a specific dock. We're going to have 4 cranes in those 2, 4 cranes in those 5, 4 cranes in those 6, and then when we do those 7, we'll have 4 cranes because we're getting 15,000 CU ship.
Okay. Well, I just want to make a point that it looks like we're really trying to stay ahead of the curve, and I'm proud to see that and not get caught one day.
Mm-hmm.
Short of equipment, short of docks, it looks like that we're projecting a pretty good program.
So we have 3 ship-to-shore cranes on order now, right? That we already approved?
We actually have six. 3 that are coming into the Newport 6.
Okay.
We have 3 additional cranes, 1 each to go in berth 2, berth 5, and berth 6. So those 3 berths will have 4 cranes each.
And then this 4 additional cranes is for future.
Seven is not the cruise terminal.
Seven is the west.
Seven on the west.
The cruise terminal is going to be 8 and 9.
So still continuing to accelerate ahead of the demand curve amid uncertainty of what's going to happen this year. I mean, you know, Tim pointed it out. You talk to major retailers who are saying, hey, maybe it's going to soften the middle of next year, but and they say, well, we really don't know. And the carriers, ocean carriers, are calling to see what we're projecting for next year. So shouldn't we be asking you? and nothing against that. It's just people are trying to get the sense of, hey, what does it look like? They know we're continuously, very strong on exports and continue to export things that are produced in this region. Imports are the wild card. And, hey, our business is still very active right now compared to the rest of the country. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. So, hey, this is we may have to reforecast this, one way or the other, and mid-year. So, but we got to speak to your point. We've got to get ahead of the demand curve. We've never stopped planning for the completion of Project 11 and the bigger ships, and that's been on the game plan all along. So,
okay.
So what would be, we're going to do 4 million TEUs or containers this year, plus minus, right?
Yeah, it's just right at, if you annualize October, I think it's within a container of 4 million.
So when Bayport and Barbara's Cut are totally built out, what's the total TEU volume that Port Houston can do with our existing, those two existing, totally built out?
So we're as Jeff told you, we're doing a little more master planning along with that, processes, procedures, utilization, a lot of things. Maybe as many as 7 million TEUs, but we're also looking at other things too. Mm-hmm. We talk about grant opportunities. Are there things in mega grant opportunities where we can have off-site inland depots, mm-hmm. and improving those capacity. At the end of the day, the one thing you can rest assured of is there's a limit of what you can do at a wharf. Once you reach that is the capacity of
the wharf. So is the wharf the capacity?
That's going to ultimately it's going to be ultimately it's going to be what constraint the wharf puts on.
How much you can get across the wharf at any point in time. And obviously you can, or theoretically, you can control the yard by doing some of the things you talked about.
Theoretically. So Jeff, do you agree with that statement?
Just mentioned to John, you did an excellent job.
We've been talking about master plan Bayport since 1996, by the way. So those constraints on the wharf have always, been the issue. So anyway, we keep plugging away, and if there's processes or ways that we can continue to get more out of the terminal, but ultimately you can only put so many ships at the dock.
Okay.
Going to four cranes sounds like a great idea to me.
We want to make sure that when that channel is finished, that we can accept those ships.
Get them in and out quicker, too.
That's why we're timing all of this to be able to do those 15,000 ships.
And each wharf expansion is, including cranes, like $250,000 ticket, $250,000,000 ticket, correct?
Yep.
Ish?
Yep, yeah, yeah.
Just in the broad.
With all the equipment, yeah.
You know, wharf eight, wharf nine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's $250,000,000.
Cranes, wharf, yard, $250,000,000.
Got it, okay.
Some of these guys being now want four and five cranes on a ship.
And Bayport today.
You have to turn them down sometimes.
We have a queue waiting to get into Bayport today. We cannot get dock six finished fast enough.
Fast.
Because we do not have adequate dock capacity to take care of the.
If you remember, we incentivized them mid quicker contract to go quicker. They're going to be finished in what? I told them in August. Every time I see them, I tell them.
What?
They are on track with that acceleration.
That's the right thing.
Yeah. Well, I just saw the guy from McCarthy the other day. I said, hey, I thought you told me April. Just joking with you. So anyway, we're very aggressive, money well spent, but you know, we could use that dock today.
Okay. So that concludes 23, John.
We do need a motion.
So is there a motion to approve the 2023 operating capital budget?
I would make a motion to approve the budget, and I would make a, if I could, a vote of thanks to Tim and his team for doing a great job. It's easy to understand. A lot of times I get lost in these numbers, but this was put forth very very efficiently and well presented.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments or conversation on it? All fair to say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go very quickly through 5 year. Page 34 gives you a look. Essentially, if you read under the key assumptions, we were targeting units in this around a published Texas gross state product number. It's around a 3.5, 3.7 CAGR across that time, so fairly conservative. You know, you look back at our 5 years through 2019, we had about an 8-9% growth rate, so we're not that aggressive, but call it a 4% unit growth rate. Obviously, growing expenses, ratably maintain those margins. Cash gets a little bit better, of course, just as you absorb all that capacity and are pushing more units through it. So fairly standard look through the five-year. We did look at how we did 5 years ago, projecting 2022, we're off about 25% to the good. So we do check ourselves and see how we're doing on a five-year. We may be a little conservative on five-year outlooks. I won't stay on this page, but for a minute 35, only to talk about cash, the proverbial bottom line, which you see very healthy. The 45 cents per dollar is just saying, hey, look, for every dollar of revenue, around 45 cents of that coming back to the business to reinvest into capital and capacity. So that trend is fairly consistent through this period. Page 36, again, very high level look. You'll recognize now the $579 million of awards for 2023, then ramping down slowly. Again, that is an aggressive number, but something that we will be pursuing this year as some volumes hold, et cetera, et cetera. The green bar is important. Again, that's your ability to award new projects. So that, with some support, again, potentially additional credit and a borrowing, again, sitting in a comfortable range through this five-year plan. And then I will conclude with the cash on page 38. Again, this is now arguably a six-year look, but five-year roll forward of cash. Again, you see the ending PHA available operating cash. You know, in this context, this far out, of course, it's largely guesswork may not be a good word, but it's largely guesswork and ending in a comfortable range that far out. But the other takeaway is that these cash dollars that we're generating are all planned for future expansion and future capacity. So we're excited about that, and we'll watch this, of course, very closely. The Project 11 at the bottom of the page, again, you can see that we'll start to pay out of those monies sometime in 25, and we'll be done from a cash perspective. According to this schedule, Charlie, I won't make eye contact with you. According to this schedule, we will complete payout sometime in 2025 for Project 11. Another very exciting development for the Houston Ship Channel. So with that, I will stop, but I want to, this is a thank you, but it's a thank you to the financial planning team. If you'll allow me, they're here today. David Zacknow is the financial planning director. David Dupree is our business analyst, and Katrina Stewart is our financial planning director. Thank you all for your work. They have to bear with, me. You can tell they're really tired of talking to me. But they do an excellent work. So thank you all.
Good graphics, too.
Yeah, very good.
And I must say, Tim's tired of talking to me, too.
I am. Exactly.
We got through it. Appreciate you. Yeah. That was all my questions.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Well, man, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I can say, I'm very encouraged by the investment we're making for the future and its jobs. But I think it should also be noticed that the private sector is stepping up locally. Like the tugboat companies, for instance, they're building these behemoth tugboats, 8,500 horsepower, 110 tons of bollard pull, you know what that is. And they're designed for these big ships, Jeff. And they're getting ready. They're building right. In fact, we christened three a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, and the pilots, I mean, everybody's pulling together here and investing in this. And it's just really encouraging.
Fantastic.
There are additional agenda items.
Okay. All right. Okay, so let's then move on to F. Jeff, you're going to talk about tariffs.
Yes, thank you for this month. This is the one item that we're going to ask for your consideration for. It was already highlighted at the beginning of the budget conversation, and I spoke to it last month as well. It's for general rate increase. As a reminder, we have marine terminal services agreement with the vast majority of our container carriers, which calls for an annual increase in equal to CPI. So tariffs 14 and 15 that drive the container facility, we recommend an 8.52% increase, which this body has basically already approved through the MTSA. And we're also asking for a 3% increase here at the Turner Basin for tariff 8 for the general cargo facility. With that.
The motion will
work. I'll move.
Second.
Is there any questions or comments?
Have they already been notified?
No.
That was the pushback?
Speaking to it last month publicly.
Oh.
So
okay,
everybody
yes.
has the opportunity. And once we spoke to it publicly, we went out and contacted all of our carriers at both facilities. This is what we're recommending to the commission. And the one that's here today in opposition,
good.
I guess that's a good sign.
Well, let's pass it fast.
Any other comments or questions on it? We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Let's see. Do we have an executive session today?
No. No. We just looked at it.
Okay, good. Okay, great. No executive session. All right, just in closing, Commissioners, I apologize for the January meeting movement. Unfortunately, I have my day job is requiring me to actually be in Florida that day. So I've asked our team to be more flexible with the schedule so that we can get it all right. And hopefully, we won't have to change it, but much more so. Rather than having it on the date that was proposed, we're going to work on trying to figure it out so we can get everybody on the same page, on the same date here. So thanks for your consideration, and we'll figure it out, okay? All right, and then just, I want to thank the whole team, the whole Port community, and just wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving next week. I'm going to have a really good one when I have my seventh grandchild coming next day or so. So we know that it's all about, when you think about Thanksgiving, it's about family, it's about, you know, being thankful for what we have, and I guarantee I'm thankful for the team at the Port for making all the commissioners look so good in the business side of the equation, and taking care of everybody. So thank you so much. And commissioners, any other?
I just wanted to say congratulations to Dean Corgi.
Yeah.
Mr. Corgi.
Oh, yeah.
And his upcoming nuptials.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Absolutely. Happy Thanksgiving.
To me, the Port is his family.
Of course.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, well, then we stand adjourned.